If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. No, this is not Dave LaGreca. No, this is not Bully Ray. This is the producer, Alex Metz. I've taken over today on the Busted Open Podcast with my friend.
Taking over?
Yeah, with my friend, WWE Hall of Famer, Mark Henry. And Mark, today, it's Falls Count Anywhere Friday, so we're talking about a whole lot of different things, but the biggest thing on this episode of the Busted Open Podcast, the world's greatest tag team. Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas join us, Mark, and what a conversation you guys had.
We had a great time. It's been a long time since we talked to those guys, and to get them on the show was a treat. I also was real happy with the conversation that we had about Bayley and Charlotte, as well as Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, and where they're going to fall on the pay-per-view, whether it's going to be the show, the match that steals the show.
Absolutely. We're going to preview everything with Clash of Champions this weekend. That's right. It's coming up on Sunday, so you'll hear what Mark and I have to say about that pay-per-view, as well as NXT is coming to the USA Network this Wednesday. It's here. We'll talk about it and what we think about this brand no longer being, quote, not part of the main roster. Johnny Gargano thinks it's their own brand and they're their own show. We'll dissect it right here today. Alex Metz, Mark Henry on the Busted Open Podcast.
Just talking about what's going on with what the women are going to be lined up for is just what we said. I thought that the women's matches were the best and they have the potential to be the best matches on this pay-per-view. And that's hard to say, especially with Kofi Kingston and Randy. And anytime you have a match that Seth Rollins, where he's going to be defending his title, like you just want to try to make sure that you stay have the attention of the women, of the men, but the women are just killing them. Alex, if you had a choice between what was going to happen with Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman and watching Charlotte, who would you rather watch?
As far as the matches that we're going to see on Sunday?
Right. You got Charlotte and Bayley, and then you got Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman. Like, those are key matches.
Man. I got to say, I think I'm more excited for the Becky and Sasha match than either of them, because I think technically in the ring, bell to bell, that's probably going to be the most exciting match. I'm excited about Charlotte and Bayley because I'm wondering if we're going to see either, you know, the heel turn of Bayley be complete on Sunday, or if they're going to keep stringing it along for a little bit longer. And with Seth and Braun, I mean, obviously they're two of the top guys in the WWE right now, but I'm not as invested in this, you know, best friends sort of tag team champions storyline where, oh, by the way, they also got to face each other later in the night for the Universal Championship. I'd have to point to either of the women's matches, Mark.
Which I think that's a bigger story than what the championship match. I think that the bigger story is how they're going to get along with this tag match as opposed to Braun and Seth facing each other. But for my money, I want to see what happens with Bayley and Charlotte. I want to see what happens between Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks. I don't know which one of those matches you put in the main event. I would have to say Becky, because Becky is the man and, you know, how polarizing she is. But how do you arrange those matches? Like,
well, I was just thinking about that, actually. If it's me, you have to think that the tag match with Braun and Seth versus Bobby Roode and
would
Dolph
be the first
would be the
on
opening
the
match. Yes.
Yeah.
I would
that
think
would
that.
Be the open. And it would be safe to have that as an opening match. Mm-hmm. But golly, that's easy to figure out.
Yeah, I mean,
and
in the middle,
you can feel the middle, but when it gets down to the last three matches, what do you do?
I mean,
like, where do you put them?
If we're being honest, Mark, I think given the history and the story that they've told, if one of the main championship matches is going on at the end of the show, it should be Kofi and Randy. That should close the show. And you could fill in the rest with Braun and Seth and the two women's matches throughout the night. But to me, that WWE Championship, 10 years in the making, they just re-racked the whole MSG moment on Tuesday night. It's got to be Kofi and Randy to close the show on Sunday, to me at least.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to go ahead and agree with you now. Hopefully we'll get Bully back in a minute and get his opinion on this. But another match that I thought was one that we should, you know, pay a little bit more attention to than it gives the credit is Roman Reigns and Eric Rowan. And Roman is, in my opinion, the guy that's kind of like at a loss right here, because this story, I think, one, went on too long. And people have kind of lost interest in it. And the whole having the guy sitting in the room with the hood on and the reveal, it kind of got lost in translation. I think everybody that was a fan kind of knew it was ruined. We knew it was ruined from the first day.
Yeah, Columbo over here figured it out.
You know, so you got to go back and look at all of this stuff. You know, I told you, I look at the show twice. I watch it for entertainment purposes the first time, and the second time I watch it, I look for Easter eggs, and I look for what I think could have been better. I start dissecting it. And when I dissected that whole series after we figured out that, you know what, I think it was ruined. I think that right away they should have gone to right after Joe and the car wreck and, you know, Roman trying to get run over, they should have went right to it. And
I think the problem, Mark, was that the story started kind of at a weird time. If you remember, the first incident with Roman backstage was 2 weeks before SummerSlam. And so you get the moment with Roman and the scaffolding falling on him, and then the week before SummerSlam, you got the moment with Joe outside the arena where someone tried to hit him with the car, and then there's no match at SummerSlam at a huge pay-per-view.
Right, so why not do it at SummerSlam?
Right. So what I think is going to happen here, and this is just me, I think they've tried to stretch this story out to get it to the next pay-per-view because they want this match between Roman and Rowan. They want them to use, you know, like Bubba said during the week, they made this a no DQ match so they can beat the hell out of each other, you know, get all the bells and whistles, the tables, the chairs, whatever they need, go all over the arena and have this kind of crazy brawl, because I think towards the end of this match we're going to get some sort of surprise or some sort of reveal about Daniel Bryan's involvement or somebody else's involvement that we don't even know yet right now, because I still don't think that Rowan is the only one responsible for what's going on. Because why else would you stretch out this story for so long to just have it be Rowan revealed 2 weeks ago?
And what do you think that reveal is?
I don't know. I'm looking at two people. Either Daniel Bryan really was the kind of mastermind behind all of this stuff and they're just playing Roman for a fool, or I kind of look back at that moment with the car with Samoa Joe and him saying he wasn't involved and I need an apology from you, Roman. How dare you accuse me of doing something so heinous? I would never do that to you. Something's here. There's got to be a little bit more meat to this story.
How about this?
Go ahead.
How about this? When you started speculating, how about Harper being involved and he's trying to drive a wedge between Eric and Daniel?
He's a little jealous, huh? Kind of been left by the wayside. Rowan's kind of found his way.
Nobody's thinking about him. Nobody's talking about him. He took his best friend and partner. Now you have something.
Wow.
And you could put those guys together right away. And it would leave Eric in the middle. Kind of like you get in a situation where people split up. And he's like, well, what about me? And Eric will be right there not knowing what to do. And, you know, he's kind of been there for Daniel, but he started and had a long, long relationship with Harper. And what do you do? And that kind of leaves Roman out, but Roman is done with it once he realized, look, this is a train wreck. This has got nothing to do with me. You had something to do with it. Bang, right away. It's over with Rowan, and he goes about his merry business. But I think the bigger story is to have Harper come back and be the one that was because Daniel was so into Daniel was so like, I had nothing to do with this. I didn't know, like, so maybe he's right. Maybe he does need an apology.
But with Daniel, didn't it feel like it was a little bit over the top? Now, I know Daniel's character, since he's turned heel, has kind of been this over the top guy. But, you know, he's coming out there flailing his arms and screaming, I hate liars. I had nothing to do with this. You got to believe. But it was just, it was a little, it put enough doubt, the way he portrayed it, put enough doubt in my mind that Brian was the only one, or that, I'm sorry, that Rowan was the only one that was involved here. But I do love your idea about Luke Harper. I think that could be an interesting twist. But as we've talked about with Bubba over the last couple weeks, he's not as confident, and I'm not as confident that Luke Harper is the guy that they're looking at to be using on television right now.
Well, I hate that because he is special.
Oh, met the guy. He's great. He was in here with Dave. We did a show with him. Really, really nice guy. I've been watching Luke Harper back when he was Brody Lee on the indie scene. Hell of a talent. I hope they do something with him, but I'm not as confident at the moment.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the only other option would be to have is to have Daniel say, you know what, let's make do with this. And Daniel tries to lead Harper and Rowan and put them together.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156 or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
I want to get into some NXT stuff with you because NXT, as we know, debuts on the USA Network this coming Wednesday, September 18th. As we know, it'll be live for 2 hours on USA, but they're not going to have the full live two-hour show until October 2nd because there's a show on USA called Suits that is finishing up. Their last two episodes are in that 9 o'clock time slot. So the second hour on this coming Wednesday night and the following Wednesday night will only be able to be seen on the WWE Network. However, this is still huge. NXT is moving to the USA Network, and one of their top stars, Johnny Gargano, he's speaking out about it. Now, Johnny lost the title at the last takeover in Toronto to Adam Cole. He didn't lose the title. He failed to get the title back from Adam, retained the title at NXT TakeOver Toronto. And I was a little bit unsure about what Johnny's future could be. Could he be going to the main roster? Is he staying with NXT? They addressed that on the show this past Wednesday. And after the show on Wednesday, Johnny Gargano, Mark, tweeted this out, and I want to get your take on this. Johnny said, I made my choice. I poured my heart and soul into this brand for years. You think I'm going to leave now that everything I helped worked towards is finally happening? Not a chance. The phrase, going up is dead. We're the main roster now. Hashtag, we are NXT, and when you're NXT, you are NXT for life.
Life.
So, Mark, wow. Henry, I ask you this. Do you agree with Johnny's sentiment? He says he is a brick in that foundation of NXT and what they've built towards. And what he's speaking about is that move to the USA Network. He says going up, getting called up, move to the main roster, that's dead. NXT is the main roster now. Do you agree with him,
It sir? Is. 100% correct. And, you know, just to address the going up, when you are a full-fledged fighting brand on national television, why is there any reason to go anywhere else? It's kind of like when they had when they brought the Tennessee Titans into the NFL as an expansion team, and they brought in the Jacksonville Jaguars as an expansion team. They had all of these players, most of which had, you know, had a cup of coffee in NFL. Guys weren't really NFL caliber players. They just brought in as many people as they could to try them out just to see if those people would stick. Well, only about 10-15% of those people was able to stay. And some of them became really, really good players. Kevin Mawai, great player, could be a Hall of Famer, was one of those initial people. It's the same thing with NXT. There was a lot of people in the beginning that were there because it was a developmental brand. And those people, you know, they practiced. They worked out. But they never were able to take it to the next level. Then slowly NXT became not just a developmental, doing shows on the weekends, your occasional match in a little town around Orlando or Tampa. It got its own television show at Full Sail University. It became a required course for some people that were in television and radio and film study. Now the evolution has happened where it's elevated to being a main brand on national television. It's gone as high as you can go. Why would you want to go anywhere if you were one of the people that have been champion? You've had to carry the title on your back. You were the reason that people come to the arena to see you. I the first time that I got to see Johnny Gargano wrestle was with you and Dave at SummerSlam.
Was
in
that
Brooklyn?
Takeover two years ago. Summers ago. Yes, that was the what was that best? The first 2 out of 3 falls match, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
And we sat in the front row, screaming like children.
There's video of it on the internet, actually.
Watching these guys. I couldn't believe it. I was like, who is this guy? Who is this? I was like, man, he's going to be great. Man, when they move up, when he moves up to Raw or SmackDown, he's going to be awesome.
And if you remember, Mark, before Ciampa got hurt, Johnny and Tommaso were on the main roster for a quick couple of weeks, and then and then Ciampa obviously had to go get surgery. So we've seen them kind of put back together as a team on the main roster, and now everybody's kind of back down, you know, at NXT again. But again, I got to lose that from my vocabulary too. It's not going back down.
You can't say going back down.
No.
They're on another brand of pro wrestling. It's like, you know, I mean, you can't say AEW, that's another company altogether. You can't say New Japan, that's another company. MLW, Impact, you can't put them on there. But they are a brand of wrestling. NXT, and I was like, wow, next. That's like who's going to be next. It's kind of still kind of developmental sound.
Sure.
But over the last 2 weeks, they have said they are next to be great.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, I get it. I understand what they're talking about now. They want to not be mentioned in the same breath as Raw or SmackDown. They want to be competition. We're talking about AEW being competition. They want to be competition. And we've sat in the crowd and watched pay-per-views already. Four or five of them. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Standing on your feet.
Sure.
Cheering like you never watched wrestling before in your life.
Screaming like Mauro Ranallo. Mama effing Mia.
Mama effing Mia!
Mama effing Mia!
And that's what they are. So what he said was a war cry for life. And I guarantee you that that's the kind of thing that sticks. And, you know, we watched WCW when Hollywood Hogan and the Outsiders, they would come out and, you know, they was like, for life. And it became kind of a joke. It became kind of like, too sweet stuff. But for life kind of disappeared. These guys, I think, will bring for life back because of the meaning and how much they're willing to bleed for it.
NXT for life.
There it is. NXT for life. Sounds good to me. What do you think?
I think it sounds great. And you know what? I like to hear it because I think for a while there was this stigma around NXT that, like, you know, you can only go so far because they're going to eventually move you to the main roster. And once that happens, it's kind of up in the air, right? But now you got guys who have worked hard. They've established themselves as top talents, guys like Gargano, guys like Adam Cole, guys like Tommaso Ciampa, guys like Matt Riddle, all these guys that were Velveteen Dream that we're going to be able to see every week live on the USA Network. Yeah. And now they don't have to worry about that anymore. They can keep doing what they're doing.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when SmackDown was created.
Wow. That's a great comparison.
And The Rock was standing there, not getting time on Raw, not getting time on SmackDown. Hunter Hearst Helmsley was another one. There were about five or six guys that they were right there on the fringe of being a main guy on Raw and SmackDown, but Hunter was no. At that time, Hunter was no Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, Hunter got over big time when SmackDown started. That was kind of when his career kind of took that, took it to the next level.
And SmackDown gave guys that weren't getting the time on Raw a chance to expand and to grow. And then the ratings started coming through on UPN at the time.
UPN? Home of the great show Martin.
Yeah. And the ratings started coming in, and we were getting, you know, I was on that too. I pat myself on the back real quick. Hold on a second.
Can't forget about Mark.
Can't forget. I got to put myself over, man. You know what I'm saying? And the ratings got like a 4.
Which, and back then, that's crazy. I mean,
it was
think
ridiculous
about that.
Because only Raw and
Nitro,
the NFL, were getting sixes. So to get a 4 was like,
yeah,
who is this? What is this show that's getting a 4 rating? A 4 point. So I was like really, really happy with that. And I think that this is where NXT is going to be. I think they're going to debut at a 4 or better.
No. Oh, yeah. In this day and age, Mark?
At this day and age.
Those are unprecedented numbers.
You know what? The only thing that's better than wrestling is new wrestling. And I'm sitting here thinking they got a 2-week jump on everybody else. And the impression can be felt by the first 2 weeks. And let's watch the ratings points. If it's not above a 3, I'm going to be shocked.
Well, I think they're going to do very, very well in that time slot, and I think they're going to debut very, very well this coming Wednesday on the USA Network. I think they will probably fall more in line with what the sort of numbers Raw and SmackDown are doing, but I think we'll see a very strong debut for them. What I'm really looking at is October 2nd, when you've got both shows going head-to-head, what those numbers are going to look like, because then I think you're going to start to see some really crazy numbers of people getting to their TVs to watch professional wrestling on a Wednesday night, because now you got choices. And when they're pitted against each other, that's going to attract more eyeballs to the television set.
It is definitely going to attract more eyeballs, and people are going to want to know, well, what is the big talk about? Who's doing what?
If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
We are going to have two of my favorite people in the world of pro wrestling, my friends Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. These guys have, I remember their first day when they came to Louisville, Kentucky, and to get polished up and to get on the national landscape of wrestling through OVW. And I am thrilled, more than thrilled, to bring these guys on and share them with y'all, because, you know, if you ever watch movies and there was always two guys in the movie that kind of led the story, that is Shelton and Charlie. I'm not going to say Dumb and Dumber, because they're both very smart people, college-educated men. But I would just say the Odd Couple. For those young people, I need you to go on and Google Odd Couple and pull up Oscar and Felix. That is who is joining us today. Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, the world's greatest tag team. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for them. Yes.
Thank you. Thank
What's
you,
up,
thank
guys?
You. Thank you, man. I don't know how we could follow that. That's a hell of an intro.
Yeah, that was a hell of an introduction.
You know what? It was so good seeing y'all both in New York at the Garden. I was like, man, who is this guy slapping me on my shoulder? And I'm always real kind of apprehensive about people touching me. And I see it's Charlie, and I'm like, oh, my God! And I just spaz out. Man, it's been at least 5 years since I saw you last in Dallas. And, man, it was just so good seeing you. And, you know, I made reference earlier today in the show and, you know, talking about, you know, how much I used to love you and Russ together, and how, you know, I know your family had a hard, hard time because, you know, being a twin and losing a twin, and you know how hard that must have been for you. But it was a hard loss for us too, as your wrestling brothers. And I remember seeing Shelton just kept his arm around you like the whole time, and I thought that was one of the more beautiful things that I've ever seen. Is, you know, you lose a brother but you gain one. And
you're right.
You know, here you are on the show. Like, how are you doing, and how's the family doing?
Doing good, man. We're doing great, man. And I appreciate that. No, but like, you're right. You know, you lose a brother, you gain a brother. And I'm like, you know, I always thought, like, you know, when Russ passed, like, he, you know, Shelton was putting my life, like, he was that angel that Russ sent, you know, to watch over me and to guide me through life. Like, whenever I, you know, and this goes outside of wrestling, when I, you know, he was my best man at my wedding, godfather to my daughter. Like, whenever things got rough, Shelton was always there, you know, like, you know, I could always pick up the phone. So, I mean, we were a great tag team, and we were blessed to be, you know, to be able to, I guess, you know, just to be able to combine our skills and yet make it a fluid motion, make it a wrestling machine to where, you know, we just looked like we were wrestling together for a long time when actually, you know, they put us together and it just clicked. So, but it goes outside the ring, though. Like, it's the same thing as in our relationship. I mean, I show him, like, man, you're stuck with me. I ain't going nowhere. So, you know, we've had some great stories, man. We've been through it a lot. I mean, we've seen our best friend. We, you know, we saw Umaga pass away. We were in the room together when he died. I mean, we've been through hell and back, you know. So, I mean, so our relationship's been tested, and it's just strong as hell. So, but yeah, the kids, I'm doing good, though. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing good, and you know, it was funny, you know, Alex and Gabby got to go to her first wrestling event with us at the Garden, and she got to get an earful because the first conversation that we started having, we were sitting there joking around and talking about people that went at each other, and y'all started, as much as y'all are brothers, you're competitors. And so tell the story. What happened? Like, Charlie, I think that you came out on top of Sheldon in this story, right?
Hey, easy. Whoa. You got Sheldon's story, and then you got the truth. So you want to hear?
Okay, please. One at a time. Then Sheldon, you get the rebuttal. All right, Charlie, okay. Go ahead. You tell the story the way you saw it.
Okay. Well, the way that I saw from being on
the truth
was the truth is that all right. So, Sheldon and I were notorious for, like, as soon as we ate, we got to the arena. We ate. We were the first people in the ring, and we were working, you know, honing our craft, working our skill, and we would always end up in an amateur wrestling match, probably to warm up, man. You know, really good. And I mean, this would go on for a good year and a half. Keep going, you know. And sometimes you'd have Kurt would jump in, or me. I think one time Kurt Brock and Shelton and I were all in there, or like around Robin. But this time it was just Shelton and I. And we're going at it, and there's Jerry Briscoe, and there's Bruce Pritchard's there. And, you know, and people are starting
instigators
to the ring. You know, and Jerry Briscoe, big amateur wrestling, you know, wrestler, coach, fan. So, man, Shelton and I are going good. And, man, I hit him with this ankle pick. But it's not just a regular ankle pick. I learned this ankle pick in college from Vince Silva, who was an All-American in Oklahoma State. So, man, like, you're shooting a low level. At the same time, you're catching his head, and you're coming across his body, like, folding him in half, and it puts him right to his back. Well, Shelton, I'm a sucker to that, man.
Oh, my God.
I'm a sucker to it. So, as soon as
oh, my God. Stepped heavy on that.
Hold on, Shelton. You're going to get your turn.
Come on, man. As soon as Shelton, man,
let him tell the truth.
I set it up, man. He thought I was going to hit a low-level single, and I saw him step, and I went low, and instead of going all the way in, I just grabbed that ankle, and I snapped that head, and bam, right to his back. One, two, I mean, bam.
Did you get a pin? You got a three count?
Yeah, I got a pin because I got a
you have got to be
got an amateur pin, and Jerry Briscoe gave me a slap on the mat, and then I got up, raised my hand, and I got the hell out of the ring. I retired right after that, and Shelton was pissed because it happened in front of
I never have seen it. I wish I had been there.
Yeah, Sheldon, I was there too for that.
Sheldon goes, man, you know, there's a lot of lights out up on that arena. Man, we got to get those light bulbs. Look it up.
He's looking up at the light. Sheldon, so now that Charlie has said what happened, you get the rebuttal, and you know, we got a lot of fans that love you guys. We may just go to a couple of calls, but I want to hear you tell your side of the story.
Okay, you only got a 30-second rebuttal, so hurry up.
So now that Charlie has thoroughly and utterly filled your station with so much cow manure, let me tell you what really happened.
Okay.
So
right,
again,
listen.
To Charlie's point, we always would get in the ring, warm up, and literally before every show, TV, live events, we would get in the ring, practice, hone our craft, because like Charlie said, they just, while we had known each other in developmental, and I met his brother and everything, we didn't actually tag together. The first time me and Charlie tagged together was literally the first time people saw us. Well, actually, I take that back. A couple weeks before we debuted. So, you know, and it's one of the things we jailed. But to get to the story, so we were in there doing our usual thing, wrestling around, shooting around. And I will admit, Charlie initiated his famous ankle kick, right? Initiated. Now, as we went into a scramble, not a straight to my back, a scramble, Charlie, when we kind of fell into the ropes.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. So, but go
ahead. The ropes, if you're familiar with the Wizard, basically our arms were locked together, and I was on one hand, one foot, and my other arm was kind of hooked into Charlie, who visually was over me, didn't pin me, didn't take me down.
But you're on your.
If you don't, answer,
you're on your back.
No amateur.
You're on your back.
No way. I was nowhere near my back.
You said I was over you. So that's a takedown.
Hey,
you were on your back.
Hey Mark, I'm going to name drop a bit here. Okay, so there's a guy named Terry McCoy. Terry McCoy is the. He's one of the greatest amateur wrestlers ever. I follow him on Twitter.
He's a great guy, a great human being.
He was a two-time NCAA champion heavyweight. Terry McCoy was one of the only people who could just handle me. But even Terry McCoy could not pin me. So this whole pin story that Charlie's coming up
Terry
with,
McCoy,
you can forget
Terry
it.
McCoy, you can Terry forget McCoy it. Ain't no Charlie Haas, because Charlie Haas had that sweet-ass ankle. Bam! I pulled the show like an accordion. He was on his back. Jerry Briscoe slapped that mat.
Okay, guys, I have to tell y'all that this is not how radio works. Like, you only have one mic.
If any wrestling fans are listening to this, any amateur wrestling fans, someone please get a message to Kerry that Charlie Haas would like to challenge you, because I would love to see Kerry wipe the floor. But anyway, so what happened was we ended in a stall position. There was no points awarded, but because most of the guys in the room don't understand how amateur wrestling works, they just saw that Charlie was standing. Visually standing over me.
He appeared to be standing over you, is what you're saying.
Right, right.
It looked like he was on top of you, but he was actually, like, hovering.
We were in a stalled position.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
When people were like, oh, I guess let's take down. Charlie was like, oh, okay. He jumped up and said, okay, I scored. And I was like, you...
So we got to get Gerald Briscoe on in the next week or so, and I'm going to ask him about this. Hopefully, he remembers.
Right. Oh,
so well, I don't want either one of y'all calling Gerald Briscoe and trying to get him to take your side.
Try to butter him up.
Yes, try to butter him up. But let's get to a couple of things, guys. You know, being that it's been a while, I've seen Shelton, so I'm gonna give Charlie the opening platform. Charlie, you were showing me pictures of your kids that you train, as well as your son being a national champion in his age group, and it's always good to see people that go into their gifting. You know, Alex and Gabby are seasoned people behind the boards, as well as if they have to be on, like Alex was today due to an emergency with Bully, he had to leave. And Alex just jumped in and filled in and did a hell of a job. And Gabby took over kind of the lead role as the producer because she was, you know, bossing me and Alex around. So now that you're doing that, and you've assumed the role that you wanted to take after wrestling, and I can understand you getting away from wrestling because you don't want to think about wrestling 24 hours a day, pro wrestling, but you wanted to stick to the art form of it and give back to the sport that you love so much. Tell us about what's going on with you and your kids that you train.
Yeah, man. So, so when I was slowing down and taking a break and stepping away from the
amateur wrestling. I mean, from the pro wrestling. My sons, I have four kids, Kayla, Taylor, Russ, and Chuck. And the boys got to the age where they started wrestling, and I got more involved. My brother-in-law, Rick Delegata, who was a two-time Olympian for the 1980 and 1984, he brought me in because my nephews are wrestling. So I come from a wrestling family, and he's like, hey, man, you got to get back involved, get back to the sport. My boys wanted to do it. So I got back into coaching. And now, mind you, I stepped away and I was doing the pro wrestling for like a good 15 years. So, you know, in wrestling and coaching, amateur wrestling, and then being a coach, man, it was like having to relearn everything. Like, you know, learning the technique, how to communicate to the kids at that age, how to explain it to them to where they understand, you know, not going at such a high level at a college level or international level, but really breaking it down to where it's an elementary level to where they're going to be successful at it. And so I was, you know, basically studying and training under my brother-in-law as a coach. And then at the time, it just, you know, after about 3 years, it really clicked. And then I took over the youth and novice program of the club and really built a really good foundation, like kids from anywhere, like from, you know, kindergarten up to eighth grade. And the crew we have now, with my son, Russ, another wrestler, Oliver, Vinny, Gianni, Zedette, Chuck. I mean, we have about six kids that are ranked about in the top five in the country. My son won the nationals for freestyle and Greco, the USA Kids Nationals. So he's ranked number one. And these kids have all placed, like, in the big amateur tournaments, like, on a national level, like Tulsa Nationals. They've all won the JOC. And, I mean, they're, you know, but my whole philosophy is you're only as good as your room, you know. Yeah, wrestling's an individual sport when you go out there, but it's your team that makes you, you know, who you are when you're out there. So when you win, you are winning for yourself, but you're winning for your team. And
iron sharpens iron.
That's it, man. And, I mean, and the practices are hard, and they are grueling. And I always tell people, I mean, amateur wrestling is like the Marines of athletics. I mean, it is brutal. And I make practice as hard as I can. So when we get to the tournaments, it's fun because they win. So, I mean, and you know, it's paid off. And we have a really good club. It's in Allen, Texas, called Best Trained Wrestling. And, you know, the high school there is a really good high school. They're probably a top 10 team in the country. Bo Nickel, who just won his third national title for Penn State, graduated from Allen and went through that program. So, you know, it's a really good program right now. So that's what I'm doing, man. I'm coaching, I'm giving back to the sport. And, you know, but no matter what I do, man, I always end up back into the pro wrestling because I'll have my kids go in. I'll say, hey, go in there and practice your high crotches, your high Cs. As soon as I come out of the room and I come back, they're in there doing all these, like, a sharpshooter, figure four, DDTs. And, I mean, my little son, Chuck, they're like, they're using him as the, they're like, hey, Dad, look, we're doing an SFU, man. We're doing you know, they're using it on the crash pad. I'm like, you know, I'm afraid they're going to break his neck. They don't know what they're doing. They're RKOing people, everybody. So, but.
Well, tell me, I watched look at some of those pictures and some of the videos you showed me.
Yeah.
And he's very accomplished. I mean, that was, you know, to win at nationals and to be able to stand on the podium at the top, man, like he must be doing really well.
No, he's doing good, you know, it's repetition after repetition, you know, like with all sports, like you got to master your craft and he'll come in. He's like, why do I shoot the same high crotch over and over again? He goes, can I learn something different? I go, man, you'll never stop. You know, these are the moves that you want to master. You know, you want your technique. I go, and my big philosophy is, we're not here to look for shortcuts. Shortcuts will get you beat. Because we are, you know, little things make a big difference. We will never forget little things that got us there. So, you know, and I think that's why he's so hard driven, and that's what's really helped him be successful. So.
When you're training these kids, do you have a lot of fun with the kids? And I'm sure that I didn't have as much fun with the parents. You know, I like tell us about, you know, dealing with parents as a coach.
I've had parents, like, so we had a dual match up in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and our dual team, we got beat, and I was livid. So I got him in there, and I was like, never have I ever, like, I don't care how tired I am, and I got into him good. And I had to have some guest wrestlers from other parts of, like, from other parts of Texas come in to fill the whole team because we didn't have anyone at those weights. And this mother comes down and she goes, and the father, she goes, "You're too hard on these kids. I have never." And I go, "Well, you know what? Never. Your son would never wrestle for me again either." You know, I mean, it's just like they this is not a sport where it's and this is a hard sport. And if it's not my job to get them ready, they're going to get hurt. And I want them to be successful. But I've had parents, like, you know, every time I have a kid say, "Hey, man, I need a water break." I'm like, "Water makes you weak." He's like, "No, water makes you weak." So he went to school, and the teacher's like, "All right, it's time for a water break." And he goes, "I can't have one. My coach says water makes me weak." So I got a phone call from the principal of the school. "Hey, you can't be telling these kids water makes them weak." So, you know, so that wasn't good. And then the fights, man, in the stands. Like, and it's not even with me. It's like parents fighting each other over a takedown or getting kicked out. Like, and I'm just like, you know, I try to stay cool, calm, and collective in the corner. But, you know, something doesn't go right and the parents don't really know about the sport and they think they do. And they start yelling at the ref and then they start arguing with the other parents. I mean, it's like watching the UFC.
Wow. Well, Sheldon, you know, you've been sitting there saying, like, tell us the you coming back to wrestling. You took a little hiatus. You started working in Japan and working the indies, and you navigated yourself back to NXT and to being back at on the main roster. Tell us kind of what's been going on with you.
Okay, well, like I said, when I left WWE back in 2010, the first thing I did was take a vacation because my entire run in WWE, my entire first run with WWE from debut to release, I never took a vacation. I never wanted a vacation. I wanted to work. I wanted to be on the road. I wanted to do what I love doing. And so when I left, that was the first chance I got to actually go, okay, I can take a vacation. I don't have to worry about, you know, having to be at a show or doing this or that. It was the first time in 10 years that I had nothing to do.
Wow. So what did that feel like? Like, you wake up and you say, you know what? I don't have to be I don't have to be anywhere. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to call anybody. Like, what did that feel like to you the first time?
I'll be honest. I've been involved in athletics year round since I was 14, and that was the first time that I was in a position where that was the first time I was in that position. And my brain kept telling me, okay, you're doing something wrong, because
for
the first time in my life, there was no plan. There was no structure. There was no requirement. There was nothing that I had to train for. You know, there was no urgency with anything, nothing to plan around. And for me, being, like, for lack of a better term, I'm an institutionalized athlete. I love what I do. For me to sit home for 2 weeks and do nothing, that for me is torture. I can handle being home for a week or so. Once you start getting in 2 and 3 weeks, it's like my brain is telling me this isn't right. Something's wrong.
So basically, you were like Shawshank. You were totally institutionalized. You were red. God, yes. You were.
I was institutionalized. So, again, I took a vacation.
Where did you go? Where did you go? What's a vacation for a guy that hasn't taken a break since he was 14 and spent 10 years with the WWE and trained and fought and traveled all over the planet? And what's a vacation?
Well, for me, it was 2 weeks of hanging out on the beach in Australia.
Wow.
I flew over, stayed there, you know, I had friends there, and just enjoyed Australia for literally 2 weeks. Hang out, travel all over Sydney, beach. Like, that was really it. And it was just, again, weird to be able to have that experience. And it was just me. Like, I didn't, you know,
Did you go work out? Did you, like, feel like, I'm going to the gym in the morning or in the afternoon? Or did you just say, you know what, I'm not going to the gym?
I literally did nothing. Well, actually, let me back up a little bit. When I immediately left, I was actually going back to school. I had gone back to school and to finish my degree. I left college a semester early to join WWE. So in 2000, I had gone back to college to finish my degree, which I did. So for the first few weeks, I had that to focus on. I didn't really think about it. I had classes and studying and tests and all the stuff. So that helped. But when I actually moved back to Minneapolis for a couple months to finish it. When I moved back home to Texas, that's when that feeling of, you know, my inner red came out, like, well, I got to do something, you know, let me write my name on the, you know, on the wall in the apartment somewhere. But like I said, so that's when I, went to Australia. In the meantime, I started doing a few indies. I first worked, I want to say my first shows were like for Carlos Colon in Puerto Rico, you know, and I started going to places I'd never been. And then I started, you know, my first American indie was out in California where I worked. I started working with a lot of guys. Like, I got lucky. The first guy I wrestled was a guy named Scorpio Sky. He was my first indie opponent ever. And
very good. Very good talent. Know,
yeah. And he was great. And he made it. He was, I mind you, I had no idea who he was. But he was so, he made it so easy. And his enthusiasm, you know, just to work with me, like, I wasn't used to that. Working with him was a great introduction to the indies for me. From there, you know, obviously started working all the scenes, and shortly after Charlie and Cornette called me and said, hey, we got some Ring of Honor plans if you'd like to be a part of that. And so that, you know, that's when Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team was born, and we went and had fun in Ring of Honor, which was, it was a great experience. I got to work with and meet a lot of current WWE talent, you know, from guys that are in NXT. Like, that's the first time I met Sami Zayn and Kevin Steen and, you know, the guys in NXT who were, like, fresh, like Kyle O'Reilly and those guys, like, and Bobby Fish, you know, all these great talent. Like, I actually got to work with them early, you know, early in their careers. And, you know, it was just, looking back, it was fun that when I actually came back 8 years later, there were a lot of the faces that I worked with were gone, but there were still a lot of familiar faces because over the years I'd been working with these guys. And of course I went to Japan and I worked in Japan almost exclusively for 4 years. And, you know, I will say I have nothing but love and respect for the New Japan organization, for my, you know, my team, you know, because I was part of a faction called Suzuki Gun. I went there. I don't speak a lick of Japanese, but working with them, being in Japan, not only did they relight, you know, they relit the fire in me, because we all go through those emotional ups and downs when dealing with the wrestling business. But New Japan lit a fire in me. They made me feel welcome. They made me feel appreciated. You know, and my, you know, the guy that I call them my brothers, you know, I've got to work with Suzuki Mizoru. Lance Hoyt became my Charlie. You know what I mean? Because I was over, you know. So it was, for me, one of the best times in my career. I always say when me and Charlie first started, that was the most fun I ever had in the business. When we first started and everything was new and fresh. my time in Japan, I would definitely say, is the second best era of my career, because, like I said, it restarted the fire in me, and it was just fun, and to be in a different culture, and to be that, you know, to be the foreign guy in the locker room, it was just so much fun.
You said something really, really that touched me, and I remember going to Louisville, and all the guys that came through, from you and Charlie, from Brock and Randy and BJ Payne and Nick Densmore and all these guys that ended up coming, the Batista, the list goes on, the guys that came up.
Right.
And when I left and went back, then all of those guys started coming in the next 3 to 4 years. And it was like the locker room was full of all of these people that I had a relationship with already over the last 3 years. And those guys ended up becoming the best guys in the industry.
Right.
And you did the same thing. That's crazy. We've had careers that lasted long enough that the people that we went and worked with on our returns ended up becoming the people that we're in the locker room with every day.
Right.
That's gotta feel to be the elder statesman in the locker room. Do you ever feel like the old man at the club?
Oh, are you kidding me? Like there are so many times I walk in there and I'll go, like this is what kills me every time. A current talent says, "I used to watch you when I was a kid." I'm like, man, am I that old?
Yes, you
are. You know what I mean?
Because I still
like I said, I consider myself a big kid. Like I'm, you know, we won't throw in the number. Yeah, I'm a big kid. I love gadgets. I love video games. Like, and you know, all of these guys are like, you know, the wrestling business to me has kept me young. Don't get me wrong. It has its stresses, but it's kept me young. It's kept me in a position where part of my job is to try to have fun. And when I'm with all these young guys, like, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, for example, meeting, like Xavier Woods. In my head, I'm going, where has this guy been all my life? Because, you know, it's like he was ready-made to be my friend. And a lot of guys like, you know, Kofi and the Usos and, you know, even like people like I never.
Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I'm like, I remember sitting at home and the first time I saw like Rusev and I was thinking, wow, he looks mean, you know, but I never thought he would be such a cool guy. You know what I mean? But it's funny how the present reflects the past, because and Charlie can agree with me, when we first got called up, like the people that we were most, I won't say intimidated by, but I'll say intimidated by was like Bradshaw and Farouk.
Yeah,
you know, but everybody was.
Yeah,
they were
exactly.
I mean, when you think of a tag team, the Acolytes was, you know, they were so accomplished on their own, and then you put them together, and they were. I mean, it was just ridiculous. I wish that I had another hour. To
tell the Spinebuster story.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Gotta have Charlie tell. Come on now. Give it to me.
All right. So, you know, we were married. Funny. You know, that's the term. We were married to the APA. And in Ron's spine on the pine, you know, I'm gonna give you this. And always in with a spine buster. And so we were married to him for probably about 2 months straight. And I'm like, I can't take this fucking spine buster, man, every fucking night. So we got to switch it up. I mean, I was coming back. I mean, my neck, I felt like I was in a whiplash, like a car wreck. My elbows were swollen up. I was getting drained. I mean, it was an out of body of experience, man, when you got hit with him. And Ron, and that's just to tell you how strong Ron is and how much of an athlete. I mean, he'd pick you up, and I mean, he delivered it. It was some spine on the pine. And I mean, I just felt, we got to switch it up. We got to switch this fucking, I can't take it. He's all right. Fucking, so Shelton's getting ready to take the spine. Something happened to where Shelton didn't take it, and Ron's like, he's looking at me, he's like, mother, and I'm like, motherfucker. So I walked into it, bam. I was dead. I was like, I can't do that. I mean, I
what a great friend, Shelton. It seems like you would have took.
Finally.
Tell him
how you eventually took it and what it felt like to you now.
All right. Okay, so, yeah, Ron, that particular day, like when Charlie finally convinced Ron to give me the spine buster, and Ron did what Ron does, which is exactly what Ron wanted to do. Ron punched me, Ron punched Charlie. I came towards Ron expecting the spine buster. Ron punched me again, and Ron turned to Charlie, and he gave him the wave in, like, get your ass over here.
We didn't get to finish talking about Ron and John. Please.
So much.
Please finish. Shelton decided that he was finally going to take a finish from Ron. And what happened?
And basically what happened was, you know, we get the hot tag. I'm in. Ron punches me. Ron punches Charlie. I come approaching expecting the spine buster, and Ron punches me again, looks over at Charlie, gives him that aggressive, come here.
Come here.
Yeah. And Charlie kind of hesitated, then he just went and boom.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a little bit of something that I don't know if y'all heard me do this before, but every now and then I'll pull it out. Okay, Charlie, I'm gonna, you know, I'll grab you, right? And then I'll hit you with this thing, right? And I'll knock your ass down. And then, Shelton, you feed your ass up, and then I'll clothesline the shit out of you, right? Right? And then, Charlie, you feed up, and I give you the motherfucker. And yeah! And then we would go home. Damn!
Yeah. That sounds about right.
I'm the only person that Ron allows to imitate him because it really, really entertains him and Godfather because and D-Lo too. We've been on a couple of like little appearances, little Comic Cons and stuff, and Ron will go, "Come on, Mark, do it." I mean, you know what I'm talking about. Do me. And it's the funniest shit in the world because you never have somebody say, imitate me before.
He get his shirt ass up.
Hey, so, like, I know we're short on time, but I really want to get this out. To your point, and not that I'm a political guy, I don't make a lot of political statements or anything like that, but in the case of me and Charlie, like I said, you call us the odd couple. But I always say, hey, Charlie's the yin to my yang. We were two guys, very opposite. He's black. I'm black. He's white. He's high strung. I'm laid back. He was the Air Force. I mean, he was a tank. I was the Air Force. And basically, we were two guys who were put in a situation where we really didn't know each other. But we took the best of each other, highlighted it, and became greater than the sum of our parts. And I think our example, much like the APA, much like the Dudleys, in our current political state of our country right now, like, we are stronger together. And I think I consider Charlie's my brother. And, you know, I think our example is something that our country, people could all draw an example from, because like I said, we are stronger together.
I 100% agree. And I appreciate it. It's a great message. And guys, I think the world knows you better today at least the world of wrestling. We'll conquer the rest of the world coming up soon. But I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and spending this time with us. Really, really greatly appreciate it. And y'all have to call in sometime. Just call in randomly, man, just so we can hear from you. Let's let it be 5 years, Charlie.
No, I won't, Mark. We exchanged our information, and I'll stay in touch, man. And you know what? I'm in Texas down around that area, so if you get a chance to come by and see the boys wrestle up in Austin at the Nationals, man, that'd be great.
I'm definitely going to try. Sheldon, I'll see you down the road. I know it won't be long.
Definitely not. Matter of fact, what are we having for dinner this afternoon?
Come on, Austin, man. Come on. This is going to be cheesesteaks. I'm doing the Philly thing today.
Nice.
But, guys, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you, and we'll see you down the road.
Thanks for listening. Catch us weekdays on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.